Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this.
Food, glorious food. That is a line from the 1968 British musical Oliver. As people are spending more time at home, food and food preparation is becoming a rising interest for many. Stats Canada released a report earlier this month saying that there is a 38% increase in grocery sales. But more surprising than that, there was a massive increase in our basic foods like flour, rice, and pasta. These sales jumped by more than 230%. Even Robin Hood flour was forced to change its packaging because it ran out of its usual bags. And don't get me started about all those recipe videos on social media or the pics of friends' latest creations. But what is more disturbing is seeing empty shelves in local grocery stores. And while we are told the food supply is good for now, it is hard to ignore the realities we are experiencing each time we go shopping. Then there are the disturbing headlines about closing processing plants and milk being dumped. But before you start worrying, local farmers say take a deep breath. They're on the job. And they're already to make sure that nobody is going to go hungry. It is what they've been doing for generations, and it's not about to change. That is what you're going to hear on today's show. The first segment is about migrant farm workers. They have started to arrive in Northumberland, and they play a major role every year in the planting, growing, and harvesting of many crops. You will hear how the pandemic has changed so much of their lives and the lives of the farmers who hire them. The second segment, you are going to hear from local farmers. As they start to prepare to plant crops, you will learn about the challenges they face, but also the determination and optimism they have about the upcoming season. There will be voices from dairy, beef, and hog operations who will tell you about their issues as they adapt. This show may change the way you look at your food from now on. So let's get started. Close to 100,000 migrant workers from the Caribbean, Mexico, and Central America come to Canada each year to work in the agri-food industry. Hundreds come to Northumberland to help, especially on the fruit and vegetable farms. Many apple growers will tell you it is an essential part of their business. But with travel bans and concerns over the spread of COVID-19, there were big question marks about what was going to happen this spring. Farmers lobbied hard and got exemptions along with financial aid packages, so these workers were given a choice to stay at home with their families or come and earn money working on farms. For some, it's not really a choice, since this money is more than they would ever make at home. Then there are the public health rules farmers must meet to ensure the safe working conditions for these migrant workers. Physical distancing, quarantine measures, and increased health inspections are only a few of the new realities. To tell us more about these challenges and the arrival of the first wave of migrant workers to Northumberland, I did an online interview with Daniel Quesada, a longtime local advocate for migrant workers and the community outreach officer for Horizons of Friendship. Here is that conversation. I'm talking online to Community Outreach Officer Daniel Quesada, who is with Horizons of Friendship here in Cobourg. Welcome to Consider This, Daniel.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Can you begin by bringing us up to date on the number of migrant workers that have already arrived and what is their current status?
So there's only around five workers right now. We're still kind of early in the season. As you know, it snowed last night, so the work has really yet to begin here in Northumberland County around some of the physical labor that migrant workers would normally do. There are the five workers that are here are working on apple orchards. So right now I would imagine they're pruning, they're, you know, organizing everything. They're, you know, doing some good housekeeping work. So essentially most of those five workers, I think it really was four of them arrived before the quarantine rules were set in. If I'm not mistaken, they arrived between like March 13th and March like 20th, somewhere around there. So that was before like all the really heavy duty rules were set in place. either way, they still completed their 14-day quarantine. Like, I know that their employers had them do that. And then recently, I think it was April 8th, another Jamaican farm worker arrived to an apple orchard here. And at that point, it was much more serious. Obviously, this is just a few days ago, the situation here. And they were very diligent about the 14-day quarantine, no contact, stay inside your – he had to stay inside his home here, or like the home that he lives in here for 14 days. And yeah, they were very diligent about monitoring his situation. And none of them, from what I understand, have had any symptoms of COVID-19. But I think we're set here later in April and definitely in May for more workers to come. We're not sure how many, because I know speaking to some employers, they're having to cut down the amount of workers they bring because they're not entirely sure what the situation will be, how to house that many people with these new social distancing guidelines and such. So that's sort of the situation now. That's where we're at.
Well, let's unpack all that, because you've said a lot of things, and I think each of those things is really important, and we should explore what it all means. But before we get there, have you been talking to the workers at all? And could you maybe tell us a bit about their mood and their mindset as they're working under these current conditions?
Yeah, like I've got a lot of workers have reached out to me asking, most of the workers aren't here yet, but the ones that have been reaching out to me or asking, what is the situation in Canada? Like, what's going on? Is it really that bad? Is it safe for me to come? Should I just wait a year and not come? Do you think, what will happen if I do come? What happens if I come and get sick? And so, you know, there's a lot of fear. And I think that's completely merited because of the situation. But there are, yeah, there's a lot of questions around what will happen if I get sick. And essentially what we can say is that migrant farm workers are covered under OHIP. They get that. So any care would be provided to them that that any other Ontarian would receive.
Now, you've talked a bit about some of the fears that they have, and you've talked a bit about some of their reticence. Is it possible, though, that we're going to see fewer migrant workers coming to Canada because they are so concerned? And are we facing possible shortages?
I don't know to what extent their fear will prevent like a lot of them from not coming. As you know, in the case of Mexico, they're just beginning in the last week or so their self-distancing measures, so they're a little behind the ball, and a lot of those folks are beginning to feel the effects of not having food and not having money. So folks are going to be looking to find a job somewhere, and these jobs up here in Canada through the temporary foreign worker program or the seasonal agricultural worker program, where they're making minimum wage here in Ontario, I think it's like $14 an hour. Like, that's really good money for back home. If you can imagine, I have an uncle in Mexico that's a professor, university professor in sociology. He makes about $1,500 a month, American. Migrant farm workers can come here and make twice that in a month, right? So these are just like really good jobs for them to have, to be able to support their families. So they're going to have to weigh, they're going to have to weigh, like, what do I want? Do I want to make really good money this year, or do I stay at home in Mexico, for example, and see how I'm going to scrape together some money to support my family during what will be soon their quarantine period and their social distancing period. So I'm not sure there will be a food shortage is necessarily due to migrant farm workers, but I could be wrong. Who knows? We'll see.
No, yes, indeed. And I guess the thing being is that, you know, a shortage of workers is going to have an impact on the farmers themselves. I mean, their ability to do this. We rely quite heavily, and you and I have talked about this in the past, we rely quite heavily locally across Ontario, across Canada, on migrant workers for the farming sector to be successful. So I guess when I talk about shortages, I mean, I guess the larger impact is on our ability to supply food at a time when, you know, food supply is absolutely critical. So with that in mind, though, I also, part of what you were saying, I mean, what a choice for somebody to have to make, you know, do I go and earn money so that my family can live and put myself in potential danger? Or do I stay at home and maybe not eat less, but then am I safer? What then is being done to protect migrant workers who are going to be coming here? What do you know has been put in place to ensure their safety and ours?
One thing I do know is that I've read here, here at least in Ontario, for example, that the health units are placing a greater emphasis on doing site visits. So inspecting residences where the farm workers live and sleep. I know in past years we've seen, you know, up to 8, 10, 12 migrant workers living in one basically bunkhouse. So you have, you know, you'd have bunk beds literally, and then there'd be like, let's say 4 bunk beds basically next to each other. So then 4 times 2, 8, you'd have 8 workers sleeping within, you know, 10 meters, like 5-10 meters of each other. That can't happen now. And I think from what I've read from the health units around in Windsor, Essex, for example, where there's a lot of farm workers, like they're going to be cracking down on that kind of stuff. And so I'm happy to see that. I think it's great that the health units will be working across Ontario to make sure that, you know, there's like better, I don't know, protocols or guidelines or measures taken to ensure that there's better spacing of migrant farm workers. The other measure I've seen is recently, it was the day before yesterday, that the government of Canada is providing $50 million to employers and farmers, up to $1,500 per migrant worker to assist with the 14-day quarantine period that migrant farm workers are having to go through. So at least my employers will have a little bit of funding or a little bit of help to accommodate workers better. Although I am kind of concerned that 1500 might not be enough for some of the measures that farmers are having to take, like renting apartments for workers, renting trailers, you know, putting up walls in their apartments and to create like separate, like barriers or separations and stuff like that. But it's good to see that there is some stuff happening. And but I am kind of concerned about what is the situation with, for example, PPE, personal protective equipment for migrant farm workers. Will they need to be wearing PPE as they're picking, harvesting and stuff like that? Or what are the best practices in terms of, you know, food handling at this point? And those are all things that are still in the works. But I think luckily, at least here in Ontario, or at least when it comes to outdoor crops, nothing's growing yet, really. Everything's kind of under a sheet of snow. So I think we might have a little bit of time to figure out these questions.
Well, Justice for Migrant Workers, a group that advocates for these people, has raised concerns about the housing conditions, just like you have. And they've called for farm workers to be housed in hotels. What are your thoughts on that? And is that something that is doable in Northumberland?
I did see that Justice for Migrant Workers put out saying that they should be housed in hotels and stuff like that. I don't know if it's possible in Northumberland. I did see a tweet the other day from, I think it was the police chief here of Cobourg, Paul, is his name. I forget his last, Vandergraaf, I believe.
Vandergraaf, yes.
Yes. I did see a tweet from him saying that the hotels weren't, except some hotels in the area weren't accepting even frontline healthcare workers. They weren't going to provide lodging for them for some reason. So, if we're not providing frontline health workers with hotels and stays like that, I can't imagine migrant farm workers will be accepted or given like a subsidy or free housing at hotels. So I don't have much faith on that front, Rob, to be honest with you. I think at this point, what I've spoken to with farmers in the area that employ migrant farm workers, folks are looking into renting or buying trailers to create essentially they have a lot of these employers have like houses where they have the migrant workers, but what they're doing is like they want to buy or rent a trailer or an apartment or maybe even rent another house so that when workers come into quarantine, they would go to that second house. They'd finish their 14-day quarantine. And once they're done that, they can go to the main house. And then when the next workers come in, they would go to the quarantine house and then stay there for 14 days and then come to the real house that they have. So like these farmers are now having to create these quarantine systems that cost money. I mean, I don't know how much renting a trailer is. That's gotta be pretty expensive, especially if you're doing it for months on end to do this, right? So it's kind of complicated, Rob. I don't know what to tell you.
No, well, but that's really helpful. I mean, it also explains too the kinds of pressure that local farmers on to try and the set, you know, meet the requirements, but also, you know, maintain the health of these individuals. I mean, remember, they're people too, right? I mean, they've got exactly. Families at home. They need to be protected. They need to feel that they're safe. And I mean, you know, we're all being told to stay in, but you know, one person gets sick in a situation like that, you could see how quickly it could spread and how damaging that would be, because we depend so much on them to be doing the work that we need them to do. So it's just sounds to me like walking a razor's edge.
Exactly.
Now, there has been some talk about migrant workers being tested locally there has been some talk about migrant workers being tested for COVID-19 when they arrive. Has there been any indication that that's going to be taking place here locally?
No, I haven't had any indication that'll be happening locally. No, I haven't heard anything like that.
Okay, because I know that there was some talk of testing them as they came, just to make sure that they were healthy. So then what are farmers being asked to do if it is necessary to quarantine somebody who gets sick after they arrive? You've talked a bit about the process when just for them to get through the 14-day mandatory quarantine, but what if somebody gets sick in the middle of the season or at harvest time? Do we know what precautions are being set in place so that they can be the sick person can be isolated or be looked after?
To be honest, I don't know what would happen at that point. Like I've seen, for example, and this isn't with migrant farm workers, but there have been a number of food processing plants, and I think in like Mississauga and Quebec, pork processing plants. There was a famous deli producer here in Ontario that had a plant. Number of workers test positive for COVID-19, and they had to shut down these plants, Rob. So people are worrying that, and I think rightly so, people are worrying that those major processing plants are going to affect the food chain. And because this is just an assumption. If you have workers that test positive for COVID-19, you're going to have to go in there and clean everything. You're going to have to disinfect all those machines and break rooms and everything, right? And I don't know how, if that were to happen, for example, at an apple orchard, for some of these smaller family farms here in the area, like that is, do they have money to disinfect everything? Is there going to be, to be honest with you, I don't know what would happen in that situation. I'm assuming if a migrant worker tested positive here on a farm, they would be placed in isolation, like go back to that quarantine trailer, and they'd have to fight it out. And if the symptoms got worse, they would be transferred to the hospital, I would assume. They have OHIP, so they get all the same healthcare as we do. But as far as like what the actual farmers are going to do, I can't tell you. It'd be tough. I tell you, that'd be very tough.
The more you talk, the more I get a sense of just how fragile all of this is. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it is fragile. And I think it's especially fragile for small farmers, right? And then the area here where it's mainly family farms, it's mainly small farmers, small to medium-sized operations. I guess if you're like a larger company, like a huge company, you might have the cash reserves to, you know, get through something like this. But I do worry that small farms, who's going to help them?
Even beyond the farmer. I mean, if it's so fragile, that apple farmer that you used as an example earlier, you know, somebody got sick. Well, if they can't get their crop to the marketplace, then we as consumers are not going to have apples, and maybe there isn't apple juice or applesauce or whatever. I mean, you know, it's that trickle effect too, that also describes a certain fragility in our ability to feed ourselves and to be able to get the food that we need. So when you start to think about this in its totality, it's a little bit mind-boggling.
Yeah. I don't think anybody was prepared for this, Rob.
I would say that on a million levels. Yeah. But, I know that the RCMP has said that it's working with local police to ensure that the Quarantine Act is going to be enforced. What steps are you taking as advocates for these workers to ensure health and safety?
Essentially, where we're at right now, Rob, is before the 50 million came down the day before yesterday, we were most concerned about the 14-day quarantine period for the migrant farm workers. So what we were and are still in the process of doing is we were putting together lifeline care packages for the workers. So these care packages contain things like food, cooking oil, coffee, basic toiletries. We were able to even get some frozen meat for the workers, and we put it all in a bag and we went and dropped it off at the different employers that were expecting workers in the very short term. So we went and dropped off all this stuff, and this is just the idea was that, you know, we weren't sure if we were concerned that when the workers arrived here from the 14-day quarantine, they wouldn't have anything, that they would just show up and they, you know, all the things that they would normally do, like go to the grocery store, go to the banks, go to do all these things that they would normally do, they can't do anymore. So they would just show up to an empty home. And so we were preparing to provide them with all the toiletries and food that they would need to get through it. Now that this 50 million came through, now we're kind of changing gears a little bit. We're still going to be providing the care packages, but we're also kind of thinking, well, these workers might also need masks, right? If they're eventually going to go to the grocery stores that you and I go to. I don't know if you've been lately, Rob, but a lot of folks wearing masks, a lot of folks wearing like homemade ones, surgical ones. I think we're looking into getting some PPE for the workers, just some like homemade masks and stuff like that. I know we have some friends and supporters of Horizons that are expert knitters, and they want to put together some stuff, and so they're working on that. So that's where we're at on that front. But as far as the actual health and safety, that's more of the Department of the Health Unit. They're going to have to have a bigger hand in the situation this year to ensure that migrant farm workers are protected and supported.
You mentioned earlier, we're very familiar with the workers coming into various towns, Cobourg, Port Hope, Brighton, Colborne, and doing their shopping and doing their banking and doing all these services. And we already see, you know, long lineups at grocery stores. Is there any special steps being taken to ensure that aspect of it as well?
Yeah, like I know there's an organization called Farms, and they're providing a lot of documentation to migrant farm worker employers and farmers about those social distancing measures. So they're providing that information and documentation in both English and Spanish for the Mexican and Guatemalan farm workers. So there is a lot of documentation going around, and I would assume, I would hope that a lot of employers, when you onboard somebody into any company or any business, you give them a little bit of a training, or you provide them with, you know, this is how we do things on this farm, this is how we work. I would assume and I would hope that employers are also going to take the step of, you know, providing some training or some support or some advice on what is going on, how things have changed. This is not a regular farming season anymore. This isn't 2019. This is 2020, and things have changed. Apart from farms providing employers with all these informations, I'm hoping farmers and employers will also pass along this info to the workers. Horizons is also putting together some information packages for migrant farm workers. So in those same lifeline care packages, we're going to be putting in a bunch of different documentation, all the stuff that we've heard for a while now: washing your hands, keep 2 meters or 6 feet away. You know, if you have any symptoms, self-isolate, all that kind of stuff that we've seen and heard for the last few weeks. Because I think education and providing information to folks will be the real key in stopping this pandemic, right?
One of the other things that I know that Horizons has done in the past is ensured that the workers do not feel isolated and remote from the community itself. What's being done in terms of integrating them into the community socially, trying to help them feel as if they're part of things rather than being separated and being outside, as we've talked about before in the past?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one this year because we always like to do some sort of gathering or like a dinner or like a welcome or farewell party or something. Or I don't know to what extent, like now that we're doing physical distancing, we can't all come together for a potluck or something, right? So we're going to have to look at ways of innovating that. The only issue is that given that a lot of the farm workers live in rural areas of the county, internet isn't so great. So we were thinking, why don't we do like Zoom gatherings? Why don't we do like, we could do like a game night on Zoom or something, but your rural internet is an issue, right? So we're trying to think of ideas. And if you got any, let me know. And so, yeah, it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough, but we'll try our best.
One of the things that I know you also do is you work to provide health services and ensuring legal rights for the workers. And I know in the past it's been a struggle sometimes to get them what they need in terms of health services and also to protect their legal rights. What additional steps are you taking to make sure that these people get the health care and have working conditions that keep them safe and stop them from spreading the virus during their time here?
So we're still working with the Northumberland Community Legal Center. We're still working with a person there. Her name is Shari Baduri. She is the precarious employment lawyer at the NCLC. And so we can't do any health and legal clinics, which is what we normally do, where we host these clinics at our office on 50 Covered Street in Coburg. But what Shari can still do is provide telephone services or any legal counsel over the phone. So we still have her on board for that, which is fantastic. And then we're also still working with nurse practitioner Lydia Rebenko from the Port Hope Community Health Center. Normally, again, we would do one-on-one health consultations with Lydia for the migrant farm workers, but due to this current situation, we can't do any physical activities like one-to-one consultations. So but she's still providing support over the telephone. So basically these services, the health and legal services now are just being moved over to the phone and we have to do our best through those means.
Daniel, I know it's not an easy time and we sort of feel our way forward each and every day and we face many challenges and hurdles. So I wish you all the very best and all the workers themselves to stay safe and stay healthy. And good luck with all of this. It sounds incredibly complicated. And I know you'll be doing your best to make sure that everybody stays safe.
Appreciate it, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
A fascinating conversation with Daniel Quesada, a migrant worker, activist, and community outreach officer for Horizons of Friendship. We're going to take a quick break. So please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back.